actually, I hate grade cricket.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Justin Langer reflects on NISA schedules and the Sheffield Shield, so we consider crowd noise sport as art, and what the fuck is happening on Michael Vaughan's Instagram. Does 150 in the IPL represent a good return on a $3.1 million investment? Is Steve Smith still looking at Joss Butler? And what is a Maxwell? And many other questions remain unanswered in the UAE. There's also tattoos, Heather Knight on Black Lives Matter, and match fixing in the 80s. Manus Labuschagne is on the show to discuss nicking blokes off at grade training, backyard test cricket, and getting his average above 65, but also not setting goals at the same time. Hashtag RTGC involves being fathered by your grandfather, Stephen Bradbury into first grade, and how to pick up grade cricketers in North London. And there's also a list of famous people that one asked TGC and knows. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, where you can get your custom bucket hats using the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping. That is at PezzyLad, BudgieSmuggler.com. You can also check out our exclusive content every single week at patreon.com/gradecricketer. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry. The fans out there know him as Pezzy Lad, amongst many other things. Pezzy Lad, welcome.
Thanks very much, you guys. Very much looking forward to this week's show once again.
Why is that?
Well, once again, you've made it sound like a lot's happening in cricket and nothing's really happening at all.
There's no much happening in the show.
During our time zones, that's all that matters.
Yes, that's right. That's right. As Adam Gilchrist said off air, you guys obviously aren't heading to the stakeholders of Indian cricket by saying there's no real cricket happening at the moment when perhaps the biggest tournament in the world is happening at the moment.
Well, ordinarily you'd say, oh, I know a bit about India, do you?
He does know about it, so you can say what you want. Yeah, he actually can say what he likes. There's a tweet this week caught my eye as we start the show is the intro question slash discussion point. Jim Congdon had a tweet. He's got a giant tweet. I'll put this up on YouTube, this image, but it's a giant tattoo of the South Australian Redbacks on his calf. Mm. And the caption of that is, now all this needs is Sheffield Shield winners 2021 tattooed on it by Dizzy. Mm. And it got me thinking, Pez. Got me thinking about club tattoos, cricket tattoos in general, what they all mean. Have you seen many tattoos on club teammates?
Interesting you say that. Because I know when we discuss this off air, you know, in our very formal pre-production meetings, which is a couple, not to lift the hood too much.
Yeah.
You do have a few examples of this. Now, my first memory when you talk to me about club cricket tattoos and stuff is I sort of have a bit of a furrowed brow, but I remember it's more of a traumatic experience because the second grade captain of one of the clubs I played at, who also doubled as the circuit master.
Okay.
Not to be confused with the circus circuit master.
Buster. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He used to always refer,
they both wrote top hat and the whip.
Sort of 2001 to 2005.
Interesting.
Okay.
Now, that's a time in the lifespan of the tattoo in the, you know, in the public sphere. Oh, it's just starting to come in.
Just on at the, you know, the short tail, the top of it. Mm. And he would refer to tattoos as tough stickers.
Did he?
No, he's got a couple of tough stickers, does he?
Oh, he doesn't have any.
He's got a couple of tough stickers.
I remember tough stickers, so it was kind of
pointing out the superficiality of tattoos. So this was a kind of your like pre-millennium Australian male
tough stickers also was like, sorry to interject, but tough stickers was just before you got those like the family stickers on the back of the car.
That's exactly right. Not to be confused.
They can be confused sometimes.
Yeah, here's my family and a dog.
Exactly, and a dog, yep.
Baby on board stuff. But so he called them tough stickers. So it was actually like, it was a term of derision towards tattoos. So I steer clear because obviously I need to conform.
Yeah.
Other things, you know, tattoo. I mean, obviously the Russian music duo.
Of course.
A issue.
Yes.
That's a real, talk about bangers.
That's a banger.
That's a real, that's a banger. It remains
what
a banger.
What happened to them?
I don't know.
Pussy Riot stuff kind of had to go away because of the Putin stuff.
I don't know. I haven't looked it up.
Yeah.
All the things she said, though. Absolute
that's
banger.
That's a banger. That's a banger.
You know, one of the
that's
great.
Slaps.
Yeah. Let's go into like the, you know, the key tattoo wearer in Australia cricket in modern day parlance is Mitchell Johnson.
Yeah.
The first thing I think about with Mitchell Johnson these days is that SAS show he's on at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
That's come out through our good friends at Channel 7.
Good friends. Good friends.
Very good friends at Channel 7. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about Mitchell Johnson, though, in relation to that. I want to talk about Jackson Warne.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
The King's Son's on the show. Now, have you seen some of the images of this?
No, I haven't. I've only seen the promos.
Mate, I mean, he's a rooster. Is he's he? A mate.
I know. I've seen him. Yeah,
he looks incredible.
Yeah, right.
Jackson Warne. I don't think he's got any tattoos, but I tell you what, in some of the promo shots, those forearm jeans don't miss. Talk about safety.
Really?
He's a real rooster.
Okay, right.
Good luck to him. Mm. He's being supported earnestly by his dad, rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
But, mate, have a go at the forearms try not to think about Warne Cullen and mid-90s gear.
Fuck yeah.
It's really good. Just the final one on tattoos on Warne. A mate of mine has the number 708 tattooed on his bum cheek, commemorating Warne's test wicket number.
Of course.
So that's a broad sort of conglomeration.
I like it.
Tattoo.
I played with a guy who is a friend and remains a friend despite this tattoo, but he played his club team. He got the emblem of that club tattooed on his ankle. In fact, now I think about it, I've played with and against two people who've got club cricket tattoos, which makes me think out there's got to be heaps out there. So maybe
As a sample
size, yeah. So maybe if you listen to this or you're watching this on the internet, then maybe slide into the DMs and show us your club cricket tattoos of your friends, with consent, of course. And because I want to see some, because I've never had the connection necessarily that I'm like, yeah, this is the thing that I want in my body forever. But, you know, who am I to judge?
I thought about it, then I just at one stage and around the time you're talking about, maybe sort of 05, 06, mm-hmm. people get a lot of Asian symbols on their arms and stuff like that. Then I looked at my arms, I was like, this is never going to work. It's never going to work with this rig
forearms
in any way. Yeah. And the hue of my skin.
Because I was thinking about like cricketers who go, because like the cricketers with tattoos, there's like Stokes, Kohli, probably the two like most infamous tattoos with cricket. Mm. So there's like a correlation between cricketing ability, you know, being an icon and the tattoo itself. And there's like Chris Gayle, Flintoff, McCullum, Malinga, all tattoos. Then, yeah, when you write, say, Michael Clarke tattoos, Mitchell Johnson went through like an identity change where like he started to grow the mo, he got the sleeve tattoo and he's like, oh, now he's angry and became a better bowler somehow.
I feel like Mitchell Johnson was so like, not anti-cricket, but like he came in through side doors into cricket. Like he was a guy who was like discovered in the
Nets. He was a
side-doorer. That's what we've always said. He came to cricket, you know, when, you know, it was at Chapel or once someone just saw him bowl, Rod Marsh. Dennis Lilly saw him bowl.
He's a once-in-a-generation bowler.
Yeah. Get him into the 19 side. All the parents are angry. He didn't go through any stuff. Turned up with a Metallica T-shirt and a mullet, you know. You can pay that. He's that anti-cricket establishment.
Well, Siddle probably had the most famous Australian tattoo. He had the big one. He's got the big Southern Cross on his back. Mm. That's before Siddle went through His identity changed. Now he's got the peroxide hair, the new teeth.
Platinum blonde.
Great. It?
Yeah.
Yep. Platinum blonde. Mm. Platinum blonde. And, you know, it's working for him.
Mm.
I like it. But
I wonder when he got his Southern Cross tattoo, you know, because it's obviously certain connotations, Southern Cross tattoos. I've got a very good friend of mine has a Southern – oh, no, does he have a Southern Cross? He didn't get one. He was going to get one. There was a time – and correct me if I'm wrong out there, listeners – but there was a time when the Southern Cross tattoo was not aligned with essentially, you know – alt-right.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. But that sort of changed.
Yeah.
About Cronulla Wrights time, I reckon. Flag started to appear down the beach, that kind of gear.
Yeah.
I started to think, Pez, about like which cricketers in history would have looked good with ink, because this is all like very new age, you know. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking, you know, Lily with like a neck tattoo, like a dragon.
Dragon.
Well, I think Richie Beno would have had like a heart with like mum inscribed across.
Oh, really?
That kind of stuff.
That's prison stuff, isn't it?
Well, you know, let the listener out the side. You know, Bradman with the leg piece that said, don't fucking bowl there, champ.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Have you not thought about this?
No, it hasn't crossed my mind. You said that, I mean, say that about the late Dean Jones out of respect as well, not to bowl on his pads. As he said to kids in the nets.
Good point. Now, Pez, let's get into the things that are happening in the cricket. And I say this and I have not talked about you in any way, so this could come out of the blue, but there was an article last night that Pete Lawler was involved in about the Australia-India situation and the CAA having a crisis meeting today, which is Monday.
As we go to air. Right now.
Which we weren't invited to, about the Queensland government today over Indian players having to quarantine in Brisbane. So the situation is that players would have to quarantine for 14 days and they wouldn't be able to train. Any positive COVID test would mean that the whole group would need to quarantine again. So the Indian players and families are flying to Dubai, where they'll meet with the Australian IPL players, which would be Smith, Cummins, Warner,
Maxwell,
all those guys. And a flight's being chartered to Brisbane from there. And then there's also an interesting part of the story where Virat's wife, Anushka Sharma, Bollywood star, obviously, who's pregnant and due in January. So it's unclear if she'll be able to come. And that actually could be critical for the tour in terms of like the families coming over and all that sort of gear. Now, on top of that, Pez, there's obviously a Queensland election. which seems to be quite pivotal in Queensland's management of, you know, borders being open and quarantining and stuff. That's happening October 31, so they're very unlikely to change, I'd imagine, before then. On top of that, Pez, nowhere in the world has more COVID cases than India, with 7.5 million COVID cases reported, 115,000 deaths. So things are good. Gabba, first test, what do we do, bat?
Yeah, that's right.
Have a stick?
Yeah. I don't really understand any of that detail, but just like, are we batting? And if we're not, then surely the incumbent government, if they're responsible for that, gets thrown out.
I would now, think so. That's part of the election.
You know, in my own politics, I tend to lean towards the, you know, the health approach over the economic approach. They do conflate. They do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if it costs, you know, comes with a new bill.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
Actually, first change, though. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get these points at the front door.
Yeah. It's funny, this issue of scheduling, which can be quite a dry issue for an entertainment show, does seem to be bubbling away a little bit, though. You know, sometimes you can read the tea leaves, read between the lines on things people are saying. Obviously, a lot of these decisions about the scheduling and whatever are happening at levels of government where there's a lot of secrecy, rightly so, and stuff. But there's a few journos that seem to be on this case a little bit. Things don't, you know, we still don't have a schedule yet. Mm. There is a hold up. Mm. There's now a little bit of back and forth between what Cricket Australia is saying and what the government is saying or isn't saying. It isn't lining up. And it might, it's starting to get a little bit close with this kind of stuff. We don't know when the games are starting and who's going where.
Yeah.
The players aren't, obviously, you know, there's no secrecy around that as well. I mean, players don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Once again, you know, who's got the new pill at the Gabba? Basically.
Mm. Mm. So there's supposed to be a few ODIs and then some T20s that India are playing against Australia before that test series starts. But it is getting close. They're all going to come straight from the IPL. So,
But, yeah, I mean, this show isn't really going to go into the X's and O's of how to get players quarantined
and
training.
We're not in charge of that.
I did note that in that piece from from Lawler, somebody else helped him with that as well. Sorry, I missed their name.
McKenzie.
But, right. There was the classic comparison with AFL. I think Queensland have said, well, as always, you don't actually understand what's happening in cricket unless you put it in AFL context, okay? So apparently they said, look, if you can find a resort arrangement as the AFL so successfully did, you will then be able to train, et cetera.
Yeah.
But as it stands, you don't have that arrangement. CA has submitted some detailed stuff, but it's not – look, at the end of the day, CA just has to do what they've always done, which is – copy AFL.
Yeah, and bow down to the BCCI.
Exactly.
So whatever they want to do.
We asked James Sutherland this years ago, do you get champed by the BCCI? Yes, he grumbled. Okay.
What was the deal with the MCG? They moved in some turf from the MCG to the Gabba. What was that about?
Well, you know, the AFL grand final is this weekend, and it's not at the hallowed MCG turf. Mm. It's at the Gabba for the first time possibly ever.
Right.
Well, it is the first time ever at the Gabba.
Yeah, yeah.
And just because it's been a tough time for Victoria, it was decided. I think it was satirically put forward by Roy and HG on the ABC that they move a part of the MCG so that Victoria could feel part of it. And a week or so later, Gil McLaughlin said, yep, we're going to truck up a bit of the MCG because, you know.
Podcast, eh?
It's a normal show. It's a normal sport.
Well, Pez, let's. I want to stay with that scheduling theme.
Okay.
But stay with me here because, yeah, you're right. It's not that interesting. But, well, it's not that funny, but, you know. Now, Australia is set to be playing in two different series in two different continents at the same time. They're supposed to be playing a test series in South Africa. This is in February, March.
Yep.
And they're supposed to be playing a T20 series in New Zealand at the same time. Justin Langer, not so happy about this. Mm-hmm. He's saying, well, how are we going to take 36 players out of the Shield, presuming he takes 18-man squads to both of those? But it does create a bit of an overlap in that it's happened before. It has happened maybe a few years ago. It happened before where Australia playing tests and ODIs maybe in two different countries at the same time. How do you feel about this?
I've heard what everybody said about this, mate. You know, like, and Langer was really strong on it. He says he understands what's going on, but he thought we were one country. And I love he puts it in the rhetorical, we're one country, aren't we?
Mm.
I thought, well, I can't disagree with that.
Not wrong
so
there.
Yeah. Well, it depends where
Doug West Australia tried to secede, and then Queensland.
Proprietary limited, West Australia. That's separate. He's from WA, so I don't know.
That's a good point.
Well, yeah, okay, maybe in that context. Ooh. Well, I mean, you know, maybe this is where Michael needs to get to go. We have to make some exceptions in the COVID environment. And look, I've been pretty steadfast in saying this for a long time. I wouldn't mind two teams playing at the same time because we get the novelty of new faces in the Australian kit. Okay, so grade cricketers especially aware of this phenomenon. It's kind of like playing threes and skipping a grade to play ones because twos are playing, you know, are in the grand final or in the semis.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is exactly the same thing. Yeah. So we get to see a few third grade equivalents play in the Australian side. So
you get dropped in the Australian team.
Okay, and let's presume for a second, we'll do the flip in a sec, but let's presume that they're going to prioritise a test match team over the T20 side.
Yeah, we'll
Is that the right thing to do?
We'll see.
Not sure.
Yeah.
Not where their trends are going.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's prioritise the T20s against New Zealand that we'll all forget. but this might pave the way for your Josh Philippes, your Riley Merediths, your Daniel Sams, etc. New faces, new skills, new things to talk about on this show, beyond scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for it. It's fine.
I think
will go on.
As we know, Pez, sport is not about winning and losing. It's about what we can watch at the end of the night when I'm eating Uber Eats. Mm. That's what it's about. I like the idea of watching a test match, you know, at night whilst having just watched a bit of warm-up with the 220 in New Zealand. Fuck yeah, I'm up for that. Get some new faces. See Australia win twice in the same day or lose. Either one's funny.
It doesn't matter how many times they're on as long as they're winning and there are good numbers next to their names. Mm. And I just feel like I'm basking in that reflective glory.
Arsene Wenger's promoting a book at the moment. And he was talking about – he was in the course of that book. Actually, Miguel Delaney said he's read the book and nothing was more interesting than him actually talking about this point. He's saying that sport is art.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like – it's just something to look at, isn't it? It's just nice for the eyes to look at. It's just entertainment. It's just, you know, you've said in the past, it's a Netflix show. It's a Netflix series.
It's a TV show. Sports a TV show.
Sports a TV show.
It's a business. It's entertainment. It's a product.
Now, it's interesting when, like, it gets to the point because, like, it's you become, like, it's a thing that you love and you do it for enjoyment all the way up into the professional realm and then it's like, oh, no, this is actually now not for me anymore and for me to achieve my dreams. It's now for advertisers to make money around it.
Mm. It's on the shelf. You got to take it. It's a supermarket. You got to pick it off and you purchase it.
It's weird.
Okay.
Must be weird.
A cereal box. Aaron Finch, all that. You're just buying cereal. It's a product. It's a, you know.
Now, what would Aaron Finch be if he was a cereal? Sort of a country, crunchy, cornflakes kind of, what is it? All brand.
See that video of him vaping the other night?
No, I didn't.
It was during a run chase in the IPL. He was vaping like a 52-year-old concerned over a run chase.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
In fourth grade, yeah.
Fuck, I've seen a bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, you know how it is with sport, like a couple of overheads, you know, as a product, sold en masse, it's entertainment, bite size.
Yeah.
So crowd noise, you know, crowd noise is just, as you were going to mention later, the crowd noise, this fake crowd noise they're putting over in the IPL or in the football, it's just, that's part of the product, you know, so we can live in a hyper reality, not real reality. It's selling escapism.
There was now you said that, there was some philosopher in the States, it was a university-backed research project, and it's 50%, his findings are there's a 50% chance we're living in simulated reality, which is some real Joe Rogan shit, but I fucking like that. Now, the crowd noise, go on.
No, I was going to say, pretty non-committal to sit on 50%, you know, what I mean? That's 50-50 literally, you know, could be any other number. It's like, okay, he's done a bit of research here.
Yeah, that cost $10.4 billion, is it?
It's about 50-50.
Could be.
Yeah, that's right. Say it is or not.
Well, it's sort of six of one, half dozen the other, you know. I don't like the crowd noise because it's inauthentic. It's not real. It's like, now I like watching the football, for instance, with the crowd noise off because I can hear the players talking.
I love it too.
I don't like like watching the Shield the other day. It's more relatable actually. I wanted turn the stunt mics up if you have to make that like bat on ball contest more. I want to hear a fucking wagon driving past the ground. Mm. You know, I like that stuff. I don't like the fakeness. It's real. I don't like the thing of like, someone's hit a six. I remember that usually just when the crowd noise gets stimulated into my brain. I don't like that. I don't need it. I don't need it.
Well, but this is the thing with sport being a product, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like we want it to lie to us, you know. People have said sport's an opiate, really, as grade cricketers, we should know that, you know, we must lie to cope.
Yeah.
When it comes to sport, you know, I'm only a few knocks away from that spot in twos.
Yep.
You know, that first grader looked me in the eye. He must like me. You know, crowd noise is more lies. It's fake news.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the fake enforced laughter on this show.
Yeah, that's right. The laugh tracks.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
I do like the quiet aesthetic. You know, I think it's real.
Just very quickly, Pez, in the last, I mean, there's around a Sheffield Shield game
start
going on, but Michael Neeser, Justin Langer said on Michael Neeser, he's a fine cricketer. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets an opportunity with the Australian cricket team soon, probably because there's 36 players about to play for Australia.
Everyone's going
to
go.
Everyone's going to get a game. Neeser's first cap of the rank. People are saying Neeser needs to play. Why? Why does he need to play?
Well, he's scoring runs and taking wickets, which is good. And this is part of Australia. And look, I want to clarify some comments last week. I fear for Neeser. I fear for him because he doesn't seem to, you know, despite runs and wickets and also So a wonderfully rugged face, I should say.
Good looking guy.
Really good looking boy. Putting a Cooper on that. Hello.
Aaron Williams. Fuck exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Kidding me? Nice bit of chinos. Watching the Wallabies. Fuck yeah.
I just want to clarify that, like, I fear for him because he doesn't appear to have the sort of Space Jam weaponry.
I agree. I had the same thought.
You know, despite the runs and wickets.
Yep.
Now, but this is good. And before we get into it, I like Langer's use of the adjective fine as well. He's a fine player. It's a safety thing. It's a sort of adjective like Alan McGilvray would have used, you know, as a fine cricketer. Bradman, a fine player. Mm. And this is Justin Langer very slowly and masterfully just turning the wheel back to the 90s, which is what we want. Just starting to use some of the old parlance.
100%.
I noted he also said, Langer, you know, he wants to see that kind of cutthroat selection battle that was a marker of his time when he played. Yeah, there were some other bad things that happened at that time, but let's not worry. Let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's try and cross it. I don't think it's impossible, but let's forget for a second that I count at least three or four players in the current Australian side that are probably a double failure away from being under the microscope. There'd be about three or four in that side where others could come in. But I don't really care about that because Lang has taken us back to the glory years through the use of these adjectives, through contrived selection battles, through not giving Michael Nisa a game because he's not, you know, he's getting all the runs and wickets, but he's not Space Jam runs and wickets. And, you know, now can you see our entitlement's returning?
We're just getting that, and that's
what we wanted. We've always wanted this entitlement.
Yes.
Maybe Nisa will get a game when there's five sides playing at once.
Maybe. Let's talk about the glory years, Pez. The glory years being like maybe between 1960 and 1990, somewhere between that. Now, I want to talk first and foremost about Michael Vaughan's Instagram. What's going on there? Because he's heading full Brexit.
Glory years, right, I see.
Because, I mean, he did a thing. He posted something on Instagram which has since been deleted, and it was a picture of Spitfire planes, and it said, the clocks go back this weekend. I'm setting mine to 1940 when this country last had some bollocks. It's a good point.
That was like the meme content, and then he sort of endorsed it underneath with his caption, right? Like,
I don't know what the caption was. I just saw it. I mean, he's posting that, and I think he was doing it sarcastically.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
Do we call Vaughan friend of the show? He's been on the show.
He's been on.
Or are we distancing?
He's been nice to him. Well, I distance myself from his comments that the COVID is just the flu.
Yeah,
I would say that.
I'm more than distance.
Socially distance. Yeah. I'm socially distancing myself from those comments.
Sprint away from that.
Look, he's been nice to us, therefore he's a friend, and I hope he goes well.
Yeah. Yeah, they just said, oh, he was nice to me.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Well, Vaughan's got that in his armour online, doesn't he?
He does.
I've never found a massive difference between dealing with him in person. He seemed like a very nice, like, funny, charming person.
He was.
And then a couple of online little plays from Vaughan that are a bit sort of like,
Hello.
What's this?
Hello, boys.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's really the glorification of war from the same people who tend to whinge about wearing masks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, war was great. War was great. Don't wear a mask. Okay.
Speaking of glory, there was a story with some KSB Cricket Info a little while ago in reference to Dean Jones, when Dean Jones reported match fixing in the 1980s, Pez. And he reported to Alan Border, it just goes to show how far we've come in the match fixing sphere and what is and isn't acceptable. Now, we've said before, cricket bad boys, you know, Mark Waugh and Shane Warne, just giving some reports about the pitch and the lineup to, you know, bookie.
Well,
so that was all good.
It's come off the long run with this. So let's put this in context.
There was a lot of
people running Alan Border's quotes this week about Tim Payne and running it incorrectly. Alan Border, like, apparently had said Australians don't, you know, won't take to a poorly performing captain, and therefore all the pieces said after that, oh, well, Border thinks, you know, Payne might be on the way out soon. It's not what he said.
He
was actually saying Payne's doing really well, and broadly speaking, he'll need to keep doing well. There's no big news in that. All captains need to keep doing well.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, that's not even Border's best quote this month.
Yeah.
And this came from a piece from Dan Bredig, friend of the show, who was telling us like some stories about Dean Jones, RIP, and one of them was around like an approach Dean Jones had. This is only a couple of years before the Mark Waugh, Shane Warne one. Just regularly, this is 1992 in Colombo. Just normal stuff. This Manoj Prabhakar, Indian player, sets up this meeting. So just pick this up here. So Jones says, so I walk downstairs and he says, I want you to meet my friend John. And I say, so what do you want me to do? And he says, I just want you to tell me, sometimes you have to, you have Craig McDermott bat at number four as a pinch hitter. What's your team? Who's likely to do well and who's likely not to do well? He wasn't telling me to fix anything. He just wanted knowledge. And I've gone, what's in it for me? And he brought up a cake tin and it had $50,000 cash in it. I was earning that in a year. Then he put the mobile phone on and said, you've got to ring me up when things are happening. And then it goes on, and I'll pick up the quote again. Jones says, I went and reported it to Alan Border and to Bob Simpson and Cam Battersby, our team manager, Jones said. And AB looked at me and said, if that's all he wanted, why didn't you take the money? There's nothing wrong. You do that on radio, I'll put it in a newspaper column. He made a good point. He said, he didn't ask you to get out or bat slow. And I said, no, he just wanted knowledge. I just don't think it's right, Alan. Just to be clear, he didn't take the money, et cetera, according to Brady's story. I just thought that was quite funny that, like, back then, early 90s, you know, Jones has come up and said to his captain, look, you know, this guy wants knowledge from me in exchange for $50,000. And Border's like, you put that newspaper column.
Fill your boots, mate.
That's a great article. They don't pay anywhere near as much these days for that.
Now, so for me, the
80 cents a word.
For me, the big takeaway was he put the money in a cake tin. Usually it's a dodgy sports bag. Mm. Well, I've been match fixing.
Yes.
You know, put it in the sports locker at the train station.
A bit more money in that one.
Yeah, more money in that.
Got to try and get AB on the show.
That's true.
Yeah.
Hey, Pez, what's happening in the IPL? Pat Cummins scored some runs. Cummins blistering 50 to make up a $3.1 million letdown. That's an article headline.
Has he done it? Great mates.
Has he done it?
I don't know. I like Kolkata Knight Riders gold helmets. You know what I've said about this? He goes with the IPL. Like, I'm looking for Greg Cricket prisms. I'm looking for Greg Cricket narrative over this. Okay, here's the deal. Overnight, Kings 11 Punjab won a double.
Super over.
Double super over against Mumbai.
Double OT.
Kings not going that well. Good stuff, right? Chris Gayle's involved. Good gear. I want the Greg Cricket stuff. So here's a few things I've picked up this week. There's three digits. You can have three digits on your IPL shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Someone wrote to me, makes me physically ill.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree.
Great.
Another one. So you would have seen a clip, he goes, and listeners would have seen a clip of pre-match warm-up.
Oh, yeah.
Royal Challengers Bangalore.
Yeah, you're talking about Kohli.
Virat Kohli on the deck and thrusting his knees, legs, and hips around in a semi-choreographed movement. Mm. And I just a few comments about this. Now, this is what he did, Virat Kohli, you know, the greatest player going around at the moment, according to most people.
Not me.
No, he's a middling player for you. Far more demonstrative than anything that would be accepted at grade cricket. Again, trying to overlay, you know, the IPL with grade cricket. Mm. He seemed to be doing some sort of dance. I just want to comment on this dance. Like, he seemed to know this dance, but did he know it too well? Mm. Did he know this dance too well? It's a tough balance being a bloke doing a choreographed dance.
Mm-hmm.
Real tough, you know, like you and things that, you know, views are changing on this kind of gear.
Well.
But he had really frightening fast twitch. Because I'd be moved to say, Virat, that's just starting to get in a little bit of, like, you've been practicing that dance for about 3 days and I'm not sure about it. But then you just see the pace of his legs and you can't help but admire it.
I have to say a few things to pick up there for me, Pez. A few thoughts. Coldy's rig at the moment is in top nick, is in great shape.
It's a lean rig.
Great nick. Forearms looking good. Got some good vascularity.
Yeah,
He's vascular. In the forearms. But, you know, he's probably in lockdown, so he's probably doing some stuff.
Okay. You want to expand on that?
No. Nah. And I feel like Kohli can – he's in that – I worry about Virat. And I think it's because he's
– Like with Nisa.
No, like with Bieber, in that he's too big for
– Sorry.
Because he's too big that he can't be taken down. And I don't think he's got people – I don't think he's got good people in his ear to be like – I don't know if that's your play.
That's enough.
Because
Zorba's in that team.
I don't think Zorba's got the social capital.
Yeah.
I don't think Zampa's got the capital to
is
be like.
Is he thinking it? Is he looking at that guy?
I've got you about seven times.
Yeah.
You know, those legs are a little fast when you're dancing down the feet to me, championship.
Yep.
I just, you know, if Virat can do what he likes, but, you know, he can't be taken down. No one can say anything bad about him because that's the end of your career if you do that.
So you're disapproving of that kind of movement? I mean, you're looking at that on second grade. You're a captain of second grade, Gordon.
Yeah.
Virat's coming through the ranks and you see that kind of warm up.
Mm.
Are you thinking, I'm not going to say anything because it's Kohli? This kid's going to be something? Or are you thinking.
No, well, if he's younger than me, automatically I'm thinking, you better score a double ton today. You'll be in threes next week.
Mm. Yep.
Championship.
And privately, you're thinking, hell of a lot of fast twitch there. Wish I had that.
Fuck, good rig.
Real good rig. Vascularity.
What's his stick? 2.9? It's like 2.10.
It just goes to show, I mean, it's, you know, so you can find grade cricket levels everywhere with the IPL. Yes, you can. Another one, another tweet yesterday, speaking of unlikely or incongruous overlapping of cultures.
Let's see where it's going.
Okay, it's from Alexander Campbell, and he says, and I'll explain who Alexander is shortly. He goes, I was walking down the corridor at the Royal Opera House last week, and a fellow dancer says, how's it going, champ? I nearly turned round and started throwing hands, but composed myself, went to the dressing rooms, and changed all my cardio sessions to upper body. And I was like, who's this bloke?
Yeah, I had a look as well.
Alexander Campbell is principal dancer with the Royal Ballet in the UK, trained at the Royal Ballet School. Just, and then I saw when I looked him up, and he's written this to us apropos of nothing. So he's getting champed at the ballet.
Yeah.
He has to change his session to go and do upper body.
Two things. I'm going to start throwing hands.
Yeah. I'm going to start knocking this bloke out. And I'm going to go, I was going to do cardio, but now I've got to do upper body exclusively because this guy champed me.
Yep.
There was an article running on the side of his bio in the Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's king ballet dancer.
King.
And the headline in the Telegraph was paywalled, was giving up cricket was a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It just follows you everywhere. It doesn't really matter what you do.
Can't escape it.
Anyway.
You ever been to the ballet?
I have once or twice. Yeah.
Unbelievable athleticism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, talk about rigs. Yeah. Fuck me. That's
I went to the ballet, the Opera House, and then later that day went and watched Manly Warringah play the West Tigers.
Fuck, like what a day out that is.
Walk with kings, not lose a common touch. I got range, baby.
Do you, mate? Yeah. All right. Well, that's the IPL.
That's the IPL. What, is there anything else going on in the IPL? Maxwell struggling?
I don't know. What's a Maxwell? What is it?
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what he wants you to think.
That's what he wants you to think. All of a sudden.
I'm pretty sure I got served a Glenn Maxwell Facebook account from 2010 yesterday.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about that. Yeah.
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 Look it up. It's called Manwell.
Just releasing
I think it's Maxwell. Yeah. Maxwell pretty big. Yeah. Oh.
Pez, we've got Manus Labuschagne on the show, but before we want to get into that, Heather Knight, captain of the England women's team, as you well know, she's coming out here for the WBBL, and she was
she's out here.
She was quoted as saying that she thinks that all players should be taking a knee before all games this season, the WBBL. That was run in the Sydney Morning Herald, amongst other publications. Mm. And I can guarantee that I reckon 95% of people listening to this show have not heard that at all. And it's like, captain of the England women's team are coming out here, WBBL. Yeah, we should be taking a knee before all games.
It was super interesting. I saw that piece, even tweeted about it afterwards. And I just thought it was really interesting how quiet that comment went. Like it was almost completely unremarked upon that, like, the captain of the England women's team was suggesting or trying to coalesce people mm-hmm. to take the knee, as some of her colleagues had, both men and women, back in England.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it wasn't as though it was something that where people could say, well, you can't appropriate that from the UK over to Australia. Heather literally said, I think we should do this. I just watched the final quarter about Adam Goods.
Right.
And I think there's every reason to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't put words in my mouth. Just read the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And just, just nothing. Just no talk, nothing on social, you know. And you just wonder, I'm not saying it's the case, you just wonder if it's this, again, that classic Australian ability to just put that on the old cover there.
No, the old rug.
No, talk about that. Gee, Nisa, fine player. He's a fine player. Two teams there.
So
this is strange.
I mean, England women played a series against the West Indies at the same time that Australia were playing against New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
and they would all the players in all that series took a knee as well. And it's just like, it's just such a small gesture, which is just so inoffensive, and if you're triggering people, you're triggering the wrong kind of people who shouldn't even be associated with the game in any way at all. And Aaron Finch, before that England series, was like,
we don't want symbolic gestures.
Yeah, education is the way forward. And that's, I don't even think Aaron Finch would even believe that. He sounds like it was a fed line that he needed to say that as a statement representing Australian cricket. But you know, like, education starts with, like, just an awareness and, like, just having the conversation beforehand or even just recognising that symbol, which is just so – I mean, you see it before the Premier League games.
Mm.
It's like 5 seconds to take a knee, and it's just raises awareness for it from that moment and just becomes part of the conversation. Then you can start learning about things. And it's just – I don't know why. I think Heather is absolutely and completely right. It should happen before every game.
Put it this way, like, we're not coming out calling for it on the show right now, but if I woke up tomorrow morning and – learned that WBBL players had decided to do it off the back of Heather Knight's leadership, I'd feel good. It'd be good. what is interesting about this is that it didn't even spark a conversation. I mean, I was even half expecting, you know, a silent majority online to like completely pan it
or sledge it
and say no. But even more possibly insidious is the classic Australian ability to just go, what? Straight over the shoulder, what? Nisa's a fine player. And just be completely forgotten as though it was, or just ignored as though it was never said. I mean, I think, look, Heather, just for fairness and balance, Heather said, my understanding is that there's going to be some commemoration or symbolic ritual around Indigenous Australians.
So before that New Zealand series, that's what the women's saying. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Should be done every game.
Yeah.
Love that.
But this idea that, like, it's not symbols, it's education that matters is the premise is wrong. Both matter. And often symbolism leads to education and vice versa.
Right.
And so I just thought it was interesting that there didn't seem to be any opinion proffered about it afterwards from anybody, online or otherwise. I'd love to know Cricket Australia's position on it, on taking a knee, and others as well. But it begs the question.
100%, Pez. Couldn't agree more. Now, we've got Marnus on the show. Second time he's been on.
Can I say one thing about Marnus before we talk to him?
Please.
I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. Now, overnight, he played grade cricket in the final. First grade final.
One day final, yeah.
And like all really good players, guess how he did?
He got found out, didn't he?
He got found out. He made 2 from 5 deliveries. He was dismissed by S. Heal. Now, I don't even know if I'm saying this bloke's name correctly. I don't know what his first name is. His name should be S. Heal.
Yeah.
Because that's grade cricket. And it just goes to show, you know. I looked up his My Cricket minus Labuschagne. I'll tell you what, his average on My Cricket is almost half his Test cricket average.
Really?
What does that say about grade cricket?
Fuck me. There you go. Strong comp up there.
Yeah, just it's really good competition. So to those who look down their noses at grade cricket, well, enjoy, Marnus.
Hello. My goodness. Lily really did ask for that, and that's really very silly. And we very nearly had ourselves a fight on the ground.
In return for speaking to me on a handful of occasions, he offered me $6,000, which I accepted.
I walked up to him and I said, how are you bowling your underarms?
I said, I don't know. He said, well, you're just about to find out, aren't you?
He gave me $5,000 and in return he spoke to me on several occasions for pretty routine questions like what the pitch was like, what the weather conditions were.
Get ready for a broken fucking ass.
Right, here goes. Since this man's test debut in October 2018, he's been the most prolific run scorer in test cricket.
All right.
Nearly 1,500 runs at 63. Let's make that 65.
Mm-hmm.
men's test player of the year in Australia. One of Wisden's 5 cricketers of the year. We obviously never doubted that from the start.
Never.
You can check the record on that.
Yep.
At the live shows especially. And now he's headed for another bubble. Marnus Labuschagne, pleasure to have you on the show again.
It's a pleasure to be on, guys. It's always good fun talking to you guys.
We'll see. Marnus, grade cricketers, as you know, have unrealistic goals. It's kind of part of the ritual of being a grade cricketer, you know. The season started now many months ago. Players would have sat down. They would have gone to their culture sessions, you know, whiteboards, et cetera. And they would have set lofty goals. What are your goals for the year? They would have put it up in front. And for many, it would have been, 800 runs and 40 wickets for the year, despite having never shown the potential to even do that.
Yep.
Are you a goal setter? And if so, can you give us an idea of your goals for this summer?
That's actually an interesting question you bring up. Because I'm not a big fan of goal setting at all, actually. Because I've had two instances. I'll give you two examples where I did it. I went to England in 2013 and I said to myself, I want to get 200s this season, and the bowling was always an added extra, how many ever wickets, but, I want to get 200s. And played the first game. I got 130 not out. I was like, good start. Played the next game, got 130 not out. And then didn't get 100 for the rest of the time I was there.
Job done. Tick the boxes
and,
early.
And And what I realized with that is, because subconsciously when you set that goal, you then, when you achieve the goal, it doesn't matter how much you convince yourself that it's not enough. Before you came, that's what you thought to yourself. So all of a sudden, I felt myself, you know, I didn't get a hug, I got a couple of 80s and a couple of 70s, but I didn't get another 100 for the rest of the 16 league games we played that season. And I said to myself, I was like, I'm not going to do that again, because you just restrict yourself in what you could potentially achieve rather than achieving, you know, above and beyond. You know, it's the same thing. If someone asked me, oh, you know, what was your goals for last summer? There's no way I could have predicted that I was going to get 400s and a 300s and a double 100.
Well, because if you saw New Zealand's lineup for the last test, maybe.
That's harsh. It's kind of like that quote, you know, shoot for the moon even if you miss, you'll land among the stars, which is a silly quote because, like, stars is much harder to achieve than the moon. Even if you miss, it's literally no one's ever been to the stars before.
And then you land in the star, then you burn up, so it doesn't make any sense.
Exactly right. Yeah. Light years away, you can't make it back.
You're spot on.
On that note, you know, like you're currently, maybe you don't want to talk numbers, but you would be aware that you average 63.4 in Test cricket. I'm sure. And there's a lot of anomalies around stats and whatever. And Vo just had minimum 20 innings. So now he's, you know, in the top five averages of all time or whatever.
Right.
Many people would say, especially at the sides of their mouths in the members bars of, you know, Sydney and, you know, Brisbane, Melbourne and places, stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, 63.4, it's going to come down. You know, it'll come down. But I wonder with you, you know, just the way you're talking, is there, is it? Is that 63.4 going to come down, or, you know, is that the way you're thinking about it?
Absolutely not. I want it to go up.
Yeah.
So for me, that's about finding ways to keep scoring runs, and I think that comes back down to that limitations and, you know, not putting any of those limitations on yourself about what you can achieve. You know, at the end of the day, if it comes down, it comes down. If it goes up, it goes up. But you've got to find the process to actually achieve, to try and keep it as high as you can and score as many runs as you can and win as many games as you can for Australia. I think that's got to be the primary goal. I think once you get into, you know, the finer details of statistics, it becomes hard to, you know, you've just got to keep making your processes the part that you really worry about how you're batting, what you're trying to do, and then the rest sort of come as a result of that.
Honestly, you're obviously very process-driven, but you're also a hard worker because I've been following you on Instagram closely for a number of years now. But I've seen you doing lots of hard work in the backyard with slips catching. You know, I mean, first of all, let the listeners what the setup is in the backyard.
Yeah, look, people always ask me about this. Actually, I think Starkey asked me, "Oh, you know, what are you going to do over the weekend?" And I, when we came out of quarantine, I said, "Oh, I'm probably going to pop down and watch probably the first couple of hours of grade cricket on Saturday." He was like, "You're joking." I said, "No, I'm being genuine. I'll probably go watch, you know, watch my best mate. He's opening the bowling. Go watch him bowl, and then maybe go home and just relax. I don't know. Come up with some things to do." But I think there's that genuine part where there's two parts for it for me. You know, professional cricket is the part that is your job, but you never want to forget the reason why you actually played cricket as a kid. And that's sort of the part I really love, you know, when you come home and you're playing a bit of garage cricket or backyard cricket or coming up with different games as you would have when you were a kid about, you know, there was still like some really good elements of training within that, but you never did it because you're like, "Oh, I want to train my catching." You did it so you could get that perfect nick off the stumps, or you did it so you could get bowl that perfect ball and nick your mate off and have your other mate catch it as the wicket keeper. You know, they're the times in the backyard where you're like, you know, they're the moments that you talk about. So you never want to forget that, because I think once you forget that and it becomes real job orientated, you lose the love of the game.
It's Redlands, isn't it? Redlands is your grade club in Queensland, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, so when Manus Labuschagne comes down to grade training, are you talking to fifth graders? You know, you're on your baggy green down there. Like, what's the, you know, are they asking for bats? What's going on when Manus turns down to Redlands training?
When I come to Redlands training, I've always got a sidearm and probably a new ball. You know, I don't sidearm. I'm happy to sidearm for hours to you, but if I don't have a new ball, you won't be seeing me do the hard yards with the sidearm, that's for sure.
So you're trying to
you're walking to my net. It's a challenge net. You know, it's one of those coaching sessions where you go, oh, you know, we're really looking to challenge you today, and swinging it both ways, nipping it with a brand new Juke under lights. So you got a red Juke under lights. They can't see it, but that's not my concern, mate. Just tough it out, grind it out. I love going down to great training and talking to the boys. Like I said, I've got a lot of mates there and a lot of friends that are playing at the club closely that I'm close friends with. And, you know, always, you know, if I've got some spare time and go down and, you know, sidearm to the boys or bowl a few wobble seams at them with a brand new Juke. Bowling with an old ball, that's for sure. Mm. There's heaps of that, and you know, there is occasionally, especially the kids that I've coached since they were very young. You know, we talk about batting, we talk about cricket, and about, you know, certain things they're facing now that I can relate to because, you know, I was in that same situation 6-7 years ago. So you know, just being able to give a little bit of wisdom and a bit of, you know, encouragement in those areas and sort of give them the bigger picture rather than looking at it such, because I know when I was their age, you know, all I looked at was, you know, each weekend, you know, was like the World Cup. You know, you're like, I have to score 100 this weekend, and then you didn't, and then you didn't, and then you didn't. So just looking at it more big picture.
I'm so curious about what you said earlier about, you know, trying to remember or separate the professional part of cricket with loving the game. It just seems to be something that doesn't seem too hard for you. It seems to come very naturally, that love of the game, and you accentuate it. But obviously, from what you've said, it's something you think about and work on too. Like, how much of the professional game do you think makes it difficult to continue your love for it? I know that sounds really strange to say in one sentence, but we do. The part of the joke of the great cricketer is that people end up becoming very jaded about the game because it can really wear you down and get you down. Like, do you observe that a lot among the international and professional players that you play with? A lot of guys doing it for a job, and how do you keep your love for it?
I think for me personally, I have definitely not reached that stage yet in my career. You know, I wake up and when it's training day, I'm excited. I was just saying to my wife, we're driving in a car, and I just realised, geez, we've got training. I got a little top-up session tomorrow, and I was like, geez, how good. I get to go and have a hit tomorrow. And just that, you know, genuinely going to training and having a hit, catching balls and bowling, you know, I don't see that as a, you know, as training. I just see that I'm going to play cricket. I'm going to do what I love. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that there's not elements, you know, over a long period of time where you do go, today's a grind, you know. Today's, you know, like a work day, if you know what I mean. You know, it's a flatty. You know, you're going to be in the field all day. You got to find things to amuse yourself, get the boys up. So I think that's the part where I think the game can sometimes wear people down. Is you know, the fielding, and they can, like, especially the schedule now can be very busy as well. But yeah, I mean, you just think about that element of, you know, when I go to the beach, or when I go to the beach, my first thing I pack is a tennis ball and a tennis racket. You know, catching high balls in the water. You know, that's a must. You know, but you don't do that because you're like, oh, I'm going to train catching high balls. You just do that because it's fun.
Let's get 10. Yeah. I mean, we hear all the time about, you know, Steve Smith shadow batting in the hallways of hotels and stuff like that. I mean, are you the same? Can you, like, switch off from cricket as well? You have that same sort of compulsive, you know, obsession type thing about, you know, just getting the technique right, feeling the bat in the hands. I mean, I've heard in the past about you being able to pick up, you know, your club mates' bats blindfold and know which bat you're holding, that sort of thing, which is insane for a start. But I mean, can you switch off from it, or are you doing the same thing as your close mate Smudge?
Yeah, look, I mean, we probably have slightly different reasons for doing it. He probably does it more from a technical and probably more thoughtful point of view, where sometimes, you know, I'll pick up the bat and I'll just swing the bat in my room. There's always a bat in my room. I make sure of that. And that's more just kind of letting my natural instincts take, you know. I think sometimes your best training elements are when you're not actually thinking about it, because that means your subconscious is doing the work, not you. You know, it's not like you're thinking about, you know, how I'm swinging. You just pick the bat up, tap it, and have a few swings, and you put it back down. But, yeah, there's definitely elements where I I find the best part, and this is what I always say to people, I can separate cricket as in when I walk out and you play for your club or your state or Australia, you can separate that with when I get home and, you know, we're in the garage, you know, we set up a nice tough wicket with, you know, a few slips and you run in and you're bowling with the ball. Like the seam is like the ball's been in the water and you've put it in the fridge and it's hardened up. It's that big. taped up tennis ball with about 40 layers of strapping tape on it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the part where I would say I don't get tired and I don't think they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't mm-hmm. think I need a, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you can play, you know, you can have a big day, you know, spend the field, you have a big game and you have 2 days off. Like for me, the 2 days off is for physical preparation so you can rest your body.
Mm.
But, you know, mucking around in the garage or doing, you know, having a bit of fun, doesn't matter what you're doing, if it's kicking the soccer ball in the backyard or doing that, you know, that stuff's ingrained in me, you know, just that fun element of cricket, but also other sports as well.
I just want to pick up on that, Manus, because there's all this other stuff we want to talk about with India, but let's leave that alone and get into the important things. I mean, you talk about the separation between, you know, how you play in the backyard with mates and how you play for, say, Australia batting number three, et cetera, but, you know, or grade cricket. A lot of people would say they can't separate that at all. I mean, one of the great conundrums or dilemmas of our time, if you're the cricketer in your family or in your friendship group or whatever, managing your way through a backyard match with family members who might be playing very casually, like a ritual on Christmas Day, can be difficult. You know, do you stand there and do you make 247, you know, off 80 balls and treat every ball on its merits, regardless of whether it's your grandfather, your dad, or your six-year-old niece? Or do you hit catches, you know, and do you do that condescendingly to people so as to say to them, look, I do play cricket and I'm not even giving you what I'm able to do? I mean, when you go out and bat at Christmas Day, are you number three for Australia is what I'm saying?
No, yeah, definitely. If you rock up, if you think you can come into the garage and just knock it about without trying, you're joking yourself. The conditions in the garage are that tough. I mean, if you get 20, it's like scoring 100. I mean, the ball is doing that much, plus some dubious umpiring.
Mm, yep.
And, you know, I think that's, and I've always said this, but the best backyard game is a game that's bowler friendly.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I've always said that.
No one wants to rock up. You know, you'd rather play four test matches, you know, two innings each, four test matches, then play one test match in one blow, rock up, smack 100. No one's got time for that. You go on flat ball, you go into the bouncer, just pitch it up, bowl nice, just nip it around. It's good for everyone.
Do you still sort of dominate, though, with your mates?
Yeah.
Look, we do have some sort of ranking. I don't have it here. We have a garage cricket ranking.
Oh, it's like system. Top Gear?
Yeah, no, we genuinely, it's actually... My mate who's got a podcast called We Got the Chocolates, they've talked about it a little bit on their podcast about our rating of, you know, you get a rating for bowling is key. And so when you play a test match in our garage, you know, it's 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. So we got a group 3-on-3 and you have to bowl, bat and keep. So you get rated on all three facets of the game. So, you know, we got a few guys that are, you know, dominant in the bowling department, but, you know, the batting department's where you really get separated. And then we got some hefty buys rules. So if your keeper misses one, it's two buys. So in a game where the team score could be 20, 8 buys could cost you the game. Right.
Yeah, cost you the game. Indeed.
Nothing worse. I mean, what's the chat like in the garage? I just really harp on this garage stuff with mine. I mean, like, actually, Pez, you were telling a story last week about Dean Jones facing a net bowler back in the day, and like, he was just whipping him off the pads, and he said, "Don't you watch TV?" I mean, are you doing the same sort of? Yeah. You're also very good off the pads. Like, you know, are you doing the same sort of thing? Your mate sort of slips one down leg side, or gives you a nice juicy half all the outside off, and you cream it through. You know, the second house car or whatever. You know, are you just are you talking smack?
Oh, there's definitely some smack talk, have to, like, and that's from everyone, you know. It doesn't, because like you said, you got to find a way to stay in there, because it's usually quite a quick turnover.
Probably carries more weight.
There's a lot of banter and there's a lot of, you know,
You don't want to tell probably us what happens on the field there, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Exactly.
Obviously
quite, yeah,
it's quite, quite spicy, yeah, obviously.
It's
yeah.
Fight Club, but backyard yeah. cricket. No,
first rule.
Well, okay, let's move. Okay, people are probably like, all right, that's enough of that.
Oh, yeah. We're getting, he's got a garage, yeah.
I just want to pick up. Yeah, he's got a garage and he hits one of the meat freezer every so often. Okay. Just picking up on captaincy here, man. It's a funny thing in Australia, you know, like bowlers aren't allowed. This is according to convention, right? You know, these are unwritten rules. Bowlers aren't allowed to be captains. Keepers as captains are frowned upon. Most teams have five or six batsmen. Two of them are usually young or new or struggling to hold their spot. So the remaining four are candidates for captain. And then in Australia's case, one of them's not allowed to do it, and there's a bit of controversy about the other one. Enough said about that. So really it's between you and Travis Head for the next Aussie Test captain. Would you do it? You all right?
And Tim Payne's got a bit of trouble with the hamstring as well. So, you know, are you going to battle ball first when you win the toss at the Gabba?
Mate, that's pretty funny, that. you know, captaincy, I don't think, is something that you, as a player, sorry to go all serious on you.
You're tearing up.
captaincy is a, you know, obviously, I'd love to captain Australia. I don't think there'd be any cricketer in that team that would say no to getting the captaincy. But I definitely think captaincy is not something that you necessarily seek for. It's something that kind of comes to you. And I also don't think you need a title next to your name to necessarily, you know, be a leader and have input within a team. But, you know, obviously with the calculations you made then, it's down to two, so...
That's just the Australian way, you know. Okay, cool. That's exactly what a captain would say. There's always a lot of chat about. I want to keep talking about, you know, Marnus, the guy who loves cricket versus guys who don't. But I think it's kind of it's well worn territory. So something kind of in the middle, like. You're about to go into the bubble. You're about to go into Adelaide quarantine hotel where every cricketer is going to be coming in and out. Mm. And, of course, yeah, the trope with you is, oh, you're a cricket nuffy. You love talking about cricket with Steve Smith only. Everyone jokes about that, even though they probably love cricket and they've just got identity issues. Like, aside from Steve Smith, who's the most underrated cricket nuffy or non-kind of celebrated cricket nuffy who likes to hide that side of themselves from the public for, you know, Julio reasons? Mm. That you do enjoy talking cricket with?
Travis Head.
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. I'm trying. Let's go through them.
But do you know what I mean when I say that, though, Marnus? I'd prefer to talk about anything but cricket. It's like, mate, you play for Australia. You've played your whole life. You love the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You love talking about it.
Name averages and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, me and Steve are definitely on probably that wavelength. Who else do we have? Let's go through it.
It's not Cummins.
Warner, Finch. Cummins is closet. Actually, yeah. I'll tell you who's very closet is Josh Hazlewood.
Interesting.
Like, and I don't mean he probably doesn't come out and say he doesn't like it, but I think he kind of comes across like he's just, you know, a little bit, you know, I don't know what your feel is, and you can maybe elaborate on it.
Yeah. Oh, country, but, just sort of say things side of it.
I've always been good. Yeah, I don't really want to do this.
Little quips here and there.
I prefer to work on the farm.
But there's so many times where, you know, during this year, I walk into him and he's like, oh, did you see that, you know, game last night, the IPL, or did you see, you know, oh, yeah, they were playing there and they're doing, I'm like, you caught me a bit off guard there. I didn't think you were going to be on, but like even more specific stuff like, oh, you know, did you see that person bat or that? And I'm like, oh, geez, that's, you know, so he would be one that I think slips under the radar in that sense. Mm. Just because, you know, he's a country fella, you know, he's a bit more, comes across a bit more laid back. Tim Payne. I mean, I don't think Tim Payne, I don't know what you think Tim Payne comes across, but Tim Payne is a snuff. Tim Payne is a nothing.
Yeah.
He's, you know, we've been talking up, you know, team room cricket all off season, you know, can't wait to get in the test bubble so we can play a bit of, you know, team room cricket. You know, we had a few great battles last year, me and Payne versus Davey and Joe Burns. And, you know, I mean, I remember one day we played all day and we came back and we played about 2 hours. We played the first test in Perth, came back and we played about 2 hours of changing room team room cricket.
That's what I like to hear, frankly. I need this from Australian players.
And just to clarify, me and Tim absolutely dusted Davey and
people were wondering.
Just, I think, really dominated him with the ball. I think Tim's got a great wrist, and it really helped with the keeping. He got a few. He actually got a stumping to win us the game.
Did he, mate? Did he?
He actually did. Stumping to win us the game. Joe Burns tried to run down, and it was left-handed batting. So he had to bat opposite hand.
Yeah.
And he just panicked, and it nipped away from him, and he got
stuck. You set him up. Talk us through it, Mars. You set him a couple of outswingers, then one in, or cross seam stuff?
Oh, I knew he was panicking. I knew he was panicking. They needed one to win, which means you just need to hit an object in the room, and that's two, and you get the win.
Yeah. Right. Let's ask about Tim Payne then, because he sort of will be right in the middle of the Nerd Julio thing then, like because Tim Payne, you know, uses Botox like half the Aussie side. Is that is that your bag as well? Like, I don't understand. Like, would you be getting into that? So a couple of guys use Botox. They're cool with that, and also just love dressing room cricket. I mean, you know, what would Ian Chappell think about this? You know, what's DK Lilly thinking about this?
Look, you know, I don't fall in both those categories. That's for sure. But, you know, I definitely fall in the trying to make it fun for the boys. You know, we're always trying to muck around and find ways to keep enjoying it. And I think Tim's very good at that. You know, it's a lot of fun. Last summer we had, you know, not only did we win a lot of test matches, but we also won a lot of changing room or team room test matches as well, me and Tim. So,
great summer.
So it was tough to say which one was better, to be honest.
Just finally, one for our. Have you got any more? Here goes. Just one for our Indian listeners as well. You know, we sort of note last time Indy were out here. I know you weren't involved, but it occurred to us that Pujara seemed to cause more troubles for the quicks than Kohli. And you know, it's been, wouldn't necessarily say confirmed, but suggested by a couple of your colleagues who bowl quick for Australia that, you know, Pujara is the primary concern. I mean, in the alpha wars between Chhateshwar Pujara and Virat Kohli, who wins? Who's Australia more concerned about this summer?
Rahane.
I think you're more concerned about Virat Kohli taking the game away from you. I think Pujara is like a slow death. Mm. You know, it's a grind, and I think you know, we're a different team than we were 2 years ago as well. You know, we got a lot more consistency in that batting lineup, as well as, you know, I think we will have the same bowling attack, but I think it's just a lot more confidence within the team, especially with Dave and Steve back. I think it, you know, it does make a difference, although, you know, you might have the same bowling attack, but I think it makes a difference in the feel and the confidence of the side. But I definitely think, you know, if you can dominate or really neutralise Virat Kohli, it does have an effect on the rest of their team as well.
Mm. Very diplomatically spoken, like a future statesman.
just get that blazer sorted, Manus.
Manus Labuschagne, thanks so much for joining us again on the Great Cricket. And we may have to have a spin-off conversation just around backyard and garage matches down the track, given they seem to engender more passion.
I'll have to send you some footage, boys. I'll send you some of the close DRS calls we've had.
Okay, mate. Here goes a quick word to our very dear friends at Budgie Smuggler, who, as we have been saying, are creating custom bucket hats this summer for your consumption pleasure. It's a hot summer.
Yeah,
it's always been hot.
La Nina. This year.
It's going to be hotter, is it?
It means it's going to be hotter, wilder weather conditions, more cyclones in the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
More rain, hotter temperatures.
Yeah, great.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, nice. Sounds good.
Flat decks.
At least the decks are flat.
The decks are flatter because of La Nina.
Well, thankfully, Budgie Smuggler, who support us immensely, you know, now creating fashion so that you can look good, you can feel good, and you can play good.
Fuck yeah. Okay. I like that.
And this week we want to talk about, well, who have we been talking about? We've been talking about prodigies.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Was Nisa a prodigy? I don't know.
I think he played 19s.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, who hasn't?
Yeah. I guess they're all prodigies in a way.
Yeah.
Johnson was a prodigy, I suppose, in a different way. Mm. A couple of batting prodigies for the year. Sachin Tendulkar was always marked. We're talking about people you can put on these custom bucket hats.
Yeah.
Sachin Tendulkar. Now, who else was a, you know,
was
who
Tendulkar 16? When he played Test cricket, I think he debuted at 16. Afridi did.
He made his debut for Bombay when he was 15.
Yeah.
Years and 232 days. They don't say anything about Indian first class cricket.
They were weak at the time.
Mm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
The thing about Tendulkar that's weird is like he debuted in what'd you say?
That team was – someone had a wedding in that team. Oh, they're missing some blokes. Right.
Yeah, test match. 16-year-old. 16-year-old debut in a test match against Wasim and Wakar. 89.
Yeah, okay. They swung it, didn't they? Wasim and Wakar. Really got it going.
Yeah. They could make the ball talk.
Yeah.
They say.
Yeah. Why did they do that?
Same wrist position.
Same position. Yeah, technically correct wrist position.
They helped each other in the nets achieve perfect wrist position. Just good net. Just good net collaboration. Good bowlers. Yeah, Graham Hick was a prodigy. And now he's just left his post as Australian batting coach, but Graham Hick was one of those guys that a lot of people feel like didn't achieve his full potential, but was a prolific run scorer in county cricket.
That's right. When did he move? Because he was born in Zimbabwe,
Born and raised in Harare.
Right.
And he was picked in Zimbabwe's 1983 World Cup squad as a 17-year-old.
Okay. Now, when I think Harare, I think, first of all, Harambe, and also secondly, Heath Streak.
Chuck Harambe on the bucket hat too.
Yep.
Just ideas again. Yeah. Just spitballing.
These are just some of the ideas. Do whatever you like.
Hick made 405 for Worcestershire against Somerset.
Not bad.
In 1988.
Not bad.
How'd you go today? How'd you hit him?
Yeah.
Well, I made 400.
I passed your season aggregate.
Yeah. I made 405.
Hmm.
Ian Botham actually said, I can't imagine you will ever see a greater innings than Graham's today. Certainly the best. He said, he's certainly the best white batsman I've seen. I'm just reading this live. I just had to check that wasn't a typo.
The pupils in your eyes dilated, just like, what am I reading?
I've picked this up on the fly.
Improv, eh?
There you go. Yeah, well, you know, both of them. Right. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
Get him on the show, White Whale.
Sir. He's White Whale, I see. I see what you've done there.
Anyway,
get a White Whale on there.
We're thinking, we've given you a couple of ideas there. We're just trying to give you ideas to put on these custom bucket hats that are made in Australia.
That's
supporting
right.
Supporting Australian economy.
Yep.
Okay. Doing really well, Budgie Smuggler, looking after you. We've got Botham, we've got questionable quotes from him, we've got Graham here, we've got Sachin Tendulkar, we've got Harambe. Okay? So don't say we're not giving you ideas, but if you don't want them, chuck your own one up there. BudgieSmuggler.com. How are these ads going, Lenny? Great friends.
Hashtag us TGC, my God. Now, Pez, before we get into this, I just want to say that we and I personally, I'm not sure about your DMs, you've obviously changed your password, but I've had so many nice messages recently in the last, like, month, 2 months. Actually, basically since we brought it back during the winter. So many nice messages. And I understand, like, lots of people out there have had a really tough time financially, emotionally, all those things during lockdown all around the world. And to, like, reach out and say that you really enjoy the show for whatever reason means a great deal. So, I mean, as I say, there's so many people. It's so nice to hear from you guys. Well, no one likes the ownership, so what I'm saying is get the fuck out of my DMs.
Mm. Yeah, say the other bit now just to qualify it all.
Got to qualify it.
Yep. Bring your character back. But thank you.
Yeah.
But go away.
Heaps on Patreon, actually. I said it before.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/CraigCricketer.
Yeah. Let's give him a break from that sort of stuff. Yeah. I'm talking to myself.
See, I've said a nice thing, then I've sold him to an ad, and I've done the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Liam Weeks.
But sign up if you want.
Liam Weeks writes in. Hello there, Ian Riggins and Sam Perragain.
Right, okay. So you've selected this question. Ian Riggins, well done. Perragain, I don't know. My first thing I think is Rogain.
Oh.
For hair regrowth.
Okay, right, okay.
I guess it's fair. I'm not going to deny that.
He says, I've been an avid, bordering on slightly dependent follower of your output for some time now, to the point where I attended the launch of Tea and No Sympathy at the Oval. And specifically requested that when you signed the book, you also write, thanks, champ. That offers an avenue into my psyche, which the following diatribe will surely explain. Throughout the history of the great cricketer, so much influence has been placed on the importance of a person's father and their success or failure as a player and person, and rightly so. Throughout all my time following the page and podcast, however, I cannot think of an instance whereby somebody has mailed in to explain how not having a father figure in their lives has affected their cricketing career. And I can see your bemusement right now. choosing to play cricket without patriarchal pressure, this bloke must be fucked.
You can see it. God, he's picked me. He can stare into my soul.
Oh, this bloke must be fucked. Growing up in rural Somerset in the UK and without a father to ferry me to games as a youngster, my sole cricketing vehicle was my grandfather on my mother's side, obviously. It's difficult to foray into the mind of a man with a comb over and a moustache, but as a man who had two daughters, one of whom couldn't give a toss about any sport, and another who not only gave birth to me to desire to do so uncertain, but also was my grandfather's last bastion of sharing the game of cricket with my fate was already sealed. Some of my earliest memories of the game involved being ferried to the county ground in Taunton with my grandfather and mother to watch Somerset in the late 90s, get pummeled by the likes of Alan Donald turning out for Warwickshire, because I guess why the fuck not? As I grew older, I spent my early teenage years playing club cricket as a considerably overweight left-handed batsman who on occasion could put the ball into the nearby housing estate. No surprises, my idol was Triscothic. Things turned sour, however, when for 90% of my car journeys home, I was berated and accosted by my grandfather to the tune of, "Why the fuck did you play that shot, Liam? Watch the fucking ball. Play each ball on its merit, etc." As I grew into my late teens, to the surprise of everybody in my close family and quite possibly the Labour government at the time, I defied the child of a single parent stereotype and did fairly well in my exams, leading me to fluke some A-levels and go to university. Through a sequence of events I truly cannot explain, I now have a master's degree. Fucking rah. Throughout my entire teenage years, however, my relationship with said grandfather was toxic in the extreme, to the point where I would flat out refuse to allow him to come to the games when I was older, often opting to risk my life getting a lift with the bloke in the team who had just passed his test. Aside from cricket, my grandfather would often chastise my decisions, such as going to uni, with rather ungainly responses such as, "I just don't see why you get a proper job. I'm now 27 and due to this rather fucked world we live in, I'm back at home and you know what that means. Regular and unfiltered sprays from the old, old man asking what the fuck I'm doing with my life. I don't even know myself, so I've settled on some shit to do with data science knowing that I can easily dodge further questioning by going on a spiel about programming languages knowing he'll switch off just like the day he did I asked for a new bat for my birthday." I guess my questions are as follows. Is my grandfather's apparent resentment towards me purely based on cricket, or was this coming anyway? Is this the sort of shit that normally happens in more traditional father versus son exchanges, or because I have skipped a generation, am I getting two for the price of one on childhood trauma relating to patriarchal wishes and asserted dominance? Finally, if the answer to the above is true, how the fuck do I get him off my back now I'm nearing 30? I foolishly gave him the link to my London-based club's play cricket page when he got a Kindle for Christmas, and now I know for a fact that even when I moved back to London in 2031 at the current going, he was still calling me on a Saturday morning staging an inquiry as to why I only made single figures the day before, quite possibly from beyond the grave. Many thanks, Liam Weeks.
Fantastic.
That's Liam. A finely worded question.
Finely worded question. He's a well-spoken and written young man.
Probably working the short ball, I reckon. Or his weaknesses now.
He's probably had that before, isn't it? Because eponymous with his name, Weeks. lazy Liam.
Everton.
It's me. Everton. Well, this is a really interesting question for us amateur psychologists, he goes. Mm-hmm. So his grandfather, despite being clearly dysfunctional in the way he's dealt with his grandson, has clearly taken a lot of interest in his cricket. Mm. Right, he's taken a lot of interest in Liam's cricket. So the question is, like, would you rather the senior male figure in your life to show no interest or toxic interest? Do you know what I mean? Because they because
I do.
As 90% of parenting, guardianship is showing up, just being there, however shit you are at it. But then this bloke is showing up to disapprove, it seems. Disapprove to the point where Liam is like, "Get the fuck away from me." During his entire teenage years.
Interesting.
Second question, how to get him off your back. Well, there's lots of literature about the pain mothers feel when children flee the empty nest, less so fathers. Now, Liam, the thing is, Liam, if you hated him having any involvement in your cricket, why the fuck did you give him your play cricket link? Okay? Now, maybe.
Self-saboteur.
Exactly. If you're circa 30, years old, as Liam alleges he is. Well, I don't know why he lies. Sound like I'm in court.
He's 17.
And you're, so if you're 30 years old and your grandfather is able, at least prolifically navigating the digital space to find out what you're doing in cricket, it's quite possible he genuinely cares and he's expressing it in a dysfunctional way, in a sort of Michael Vaughan 1940s way. You know?
When this country last had some bollocks.
He might be trying his best. Maybe his father, who was clearly W.G. Grace.
Obviously. clearly.
Supported his cricket worse than that. Yeah. And his father, Henry VIII. So
there's footage of W.G. Grace.
And I'm just thinking, if you want him to get off your back with the play cricket stuff, well, I allude, you know, he alluded to being a data scientist.
Yeah.
That sounds like some hacking shit to me or something. Just hack it in. On, yeah. Hack in.
Now, I've only ever seen a grandfather come to a great cricket game, and he was just so fucking alpha that he didn't understand why he didn't just like tee off like it was a baseball game, just hit home runs all the time, basically. And that was his idea of cricket, not obviously nuanced in the laws of the game or the difficulty in that skill and that execution of that skill. But I feel like with grandfathers, now I think there's actually I'm basing this off nothing, but I do believe there is something that happens in the brain, as in there's actual scientific research of this, that like you pass a certain age and you stop caring about what other people think about you. And for the grandfather, he just like, he doesn't give a fuck. I mean, obviously he loves Liam. That's
do you get that view? Yeah, I think he's projecting a lot of other stuff onto Liam. He's
projecting.
But I think he cares. I mean, it sounds like all he said to him is play its ball on his merits. Liam went, fuck, take some criticism. trying to hit him into the fucking, onto the roofs.
There's a fucking week.
Any danger of a forward defence?
Yeah.
I heard Alan Border say that in the press box ones.
What did he say?
Like, any danger of a forward defence? I don't know who he was talking about. Harris or something.
Stark.
It's really weird seeing Alan Border like be like the Alan Border that you remember as a kid.
Yeah.
Because he's turned into
granddad.
He's a friendly grandfatherly figure.
Yeah, that's right.
Then you see him like, any danger or something.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah.
You could tell Steve Waugh fuck off.
Yeah. But would he? With a nice pair of Werther's originals.
If he needed to. I reckon Border could tell anyone to get out of here if he needed to.
Border is like mafioso type. Like he doesn't need to be aggressive because he's got the power.
He's the goddaddy for me still, he's goddaddy. Border. But that's just because of my age.
Yeah.
I'm sure people say the same, but Ian Chappell might be Border's goddaddy.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
And who was Chappell's? Bradman. And doesn't Chappell have issues with that?
He does as much as
see what I mean? It goes all the way back to Charlie McCartney. So, yeah, Liam, it just goes to show it's generational.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do is have a child yourself and just improve a little bit. Incrementalism, like Obama.
They call that McCartneyism.
And are we happy with that answer? Happy with that, Liam?
Not unhappy with that.
Okay. Jet Shaw writes in, Jet Shaw.
Yeah.
Dear TGC, g'day, Pezzy Lad and Higo Rat. I am 25-year-old.
That's good.
I'm 25 years old who decided at the age of 23 I would return to my Premier Cricket Club and pick up where I left off. I was a promising young cricketer, an opening wicket-keeping batsman who made many of starts but failed to ever go on, a trusty gloveman who spent many overs diving down leg side, avoiding any chance there was to keep buyers off his name. At the age of 16, I made my second grade debut, where I was introduced to 30-year-old men who flat out abused you, cleared the front leg at any chance, and presumably only played cricket on a Saturday afternoon to get away from their horrible marriage and accident of kids. I soon gave up cricket to pursue my other love of football or soccer for my fellow Australian listeners. I went on to trial in Europe and played in our local league's best divisions.
Okay. Flex.
After reaching 23, we need a little soundbite there. After reaching 23, I decided the time was right to return to rare chat, shit rigs, and bang average grade cricket. My first game, he actually has an exclamation mark after that. My first game, I was selected in the fourth grade squad. I then went on to finish the season making my first grade debut. What an honour being presented your first grade debut, baggy. The following season, after missing another pre-season due to winter sports, I started in fourth grade. I slowly moved up the grades again as my teammates started to give me the nickname Stephen Bradbury. My question to you boys is, was returning to grade cricket after almost an 8-year layoff a true show of my ego, or was it because I wanted to impress my father who couldn't stand the game of cricket and didn't understand why I didn't chin the fucker from ball one? As making a quick fire 30 was better than nicking off for another 5 off 30 rocks, but looking good doing so. Am I really just another Stephen Bradbury who was gifted games purely because there were no other keepers? And do I persist on another season coming after missing another preseason with the potential of playing the first couple of rounds, playing carpet cricket with some fat 40-year-old ex-fourth grade players who never made it, or do I enjoy my off-season and prepare myself for another season of football? Kind regards, Jet.
You've done very well to read that in a way that is understood. Jet Shaw, great name. Jet Shaw fucks. Jet Shaw gets it done. I like the like School of Fish, Murder of Crows, Accident of Kids. Now, Jet, you were the beneficiary of the well-known good at other sports selection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you're identified as a capable player of another code, it's always going to be a better code, you'll be afforded luxuries and riches not available to less coordinated and gifted club members. And the word gifted is a word here because you've likely done fuck all to deserve such a thing. Obviously, you're injured all the time as well, so your body hates doing sport, but you're obviously very good at it, and you've won a genetic lottery of gifts. Now, you must use this as your identity moving forward. Obviously, Pez, we've said this many times in the past. Some of the luxuries that you're afforded: social media profile pictures of sport, club training shorts, memorabilia, conversations. You will now be the alpha male in any sport chat forever. So as long as you don't come across anyone who's actually achieved something in the game, rather than some carpet cricket against some fucking fourth graders, whatever you're talking about, you should be okay.
You sort of said that with the soberness of like Dan Andrews reporting the number of cases at the start of the press conference.
Should have won some North Face today.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, Jet, what I'm hearing is the following.
What are you hearing, Pez?
I'm very good at two sports. I could have my choice of either sports. Cricket is a difficult sport, but I'm good at it. I don't do preseason, but eventually I work my way up to ones.
Thoughts?
I looked him up on MyCricket.
How'd he go?
His last game was in under-14s, as you said. Okay. A couple of questions about this, Jet. It is proper grade cricket. You always have to check out, you know, people say, oh, I play grade cricket. Do you? Do you, mate? Bit of sub-district stuff, is it? Mm. Is it Shire stuff? Is it city and suburban, Melbourne weird stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Victorian weird stuff. No, this is proper grade cricket. This is Premier Cricket, WA.
Is that where he plays?
Yeah, WA, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So this bloke plays. There were no other Jet Shaws on my cricket. Listen, first thing I just want to – maybe this is a Sydney Test cricket thing. Okay, yeah, he plays Premier Cricket. I'll pay it in WA. And I also like West Australian cricket generally. They're the sort of next biggest alphas. If you're from our vintage.
Because of the mining situation.
They're
in the mines.
The colours are good. The sun is sharp.
Hot.
Damian Martin, Brendan Julian, Hussey, Langer, you know, Tom Moody, these kind of guys around that time.
Yep.
Langer. You don't fuck with them. Don't fuck with
Campbell.
WA. Yeah, big thick guys.
Yeah, Joe
thick,
Angel.
Thick guys.
Fucking thick.
Big boys.
Joe Angel was fucking thick.
Yeah, big and thick. Marcus North, the snorkel.
Fucking thick.
Gilchrist goes over from here.
Fits in like a glove.
Exactly. Mm. WA cricket. I respect it.
Brendan Julian. Did you say Brendan Julian?
Of course. Up top.
Fucking captain.
Fuck me. Jesus. Would have walked out of his studio and said Brendan Julian, the top two at least.
Boys.
Ever held the Sheffield Shield? Yeah, mate.
You ever been to the Caribbean? Yeah. No, don't go.
He didn't know what we were talking about, but he knew he had to out for us back. He did not have a clue, but the reflex kicked in.
That's Western Australia. That's some Gina Reinhardt shit.
Yeah. Look, with all that said, he goes.
Yeah, of course.
I've never heard in grade cricket terms.
What haven't you heard?
Of anyone making their way to first grade at a club from fourth grade.
Yeah.
Only to miss preseason.
Yeah.
Having made first grade, misses preseason and recommences in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Now, what's that?
Do not collect $200.
Who were the keepers at his club?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm thinking, well, that's immediately like, oh, keepers are playing state cricket. Like, so is it Gilchrist and
English.
Ryan Campbell?
Yeah.
Like, were they at his club or something when he was 14 years old or whatever?
Yeah.
I don't know. But he's really fallen down the pecking order, having finished the season in ones.
They recruited strongly.
Yeah. Or he, you know, they really value preseason. They really mean it when they say no train, no play.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, pay your subs or don't play. Fucking hell.
Look, I got in a bit of a rabbit hole because he played for... Oh,
here we
for,
go. Now we're talking.
I forget the name of the club. Now I'm thinking Golems. It's
Are you?
WA cricket. I can't type in Golems. Yeah. It's going to say Goslings or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Gotham. It's the fucking Dark Knight.
Golems in my head.
Dark Knight's playing fours this week.
Really sorry to that club. But
well, we're not going there, are we?
No, but on the club's website, it's like it has all the whole culture stuff. It has like a PDF of player values.
It's real
AFL styles.
Yeah, okay.
But like the main thing it says on is like, we want to change the perception of this club. And I'm
right.
And I noted, I looked at its history because I was trying to work out if it was a great cricket club.
Right.
And its history, it said like our most celebrated player is Luke Pommersbatch.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm thinking, with respect to Pommersbatch, yeah, that's great. Yeah. So many people have gone through WA cricket who've gone on to do better than Luke.
Yeah.
But clearly haven't played for that club. And then I put that together with, we want to change your perception of this club. And I'm like, what the fuck happened to this club?
If it's Gotham. Mate, they've got corruption.
Starts with G. Pommersbatch is their best player. They're called Gollum. And this guy goes from ones to fours to ones. He's back and forth. He's all over the show. I don't know. Yeah. A little bit more investigation required.
The club name would put it. Looking for rings.
Anyway, I hope that helps.
Susanna Kingston, last one, Pez. Yeah, let's just do one more.
Okay.
Susanna Kingston, dear TGC.
Oh, I like this one.
I'm a fan from the UK. The other day I was enjoying a socially distanced drink at a North London pub with some friends. I started chatting to an Australian guy who was there with a couple of his mates. As a joke, I asked him if he'd ever played grade cricket. He said yes and immediately took his top off. There's no correlation there. I began. Yep. Yeah, of course. Here's my naked body. I began to suspect that he may have been a wee bit drunk. In an effort to get his top back on, I tried to change the subject. However, he continued. Not only had this man played great cricket, he was also apparently a relation of Mitch Johnson and had even faced Johnson in the nets. At this point, he lost me. I began to get suspicious. I could well believe that this guy was a former great cricketer, but he did not strike me as someone who could possibly have faced Mitchell Johnson in the nets. Perhaps I'm wrong, and this is why he had relocated such a huge distance. Anyway, he was eventually pulled away by the barman, and I was left to wonder about it for the duration of my walk home. My question is, do you have any advice on how to chat up potentially jaded former grade cricketers? Best wishes, Susie.
I love, this is a great question. I love the question, have you played grade cricket? And this guy, just gets to the point of the entire conversation and just takes his shirt off. It skips so much of the niceties. It's something almost interpretive dance about it. Have you played grade cricket? Feast on this body. You know what I mean? It's the human kind of alpha ritual.
Take your shirt off.
And then a few things in there. We could talk about, facing Johnson and the nets and all that kind of gear, but I think this is more of a love question. This is more of a chatting up question. You know what I mean? I found it weird that he's like, yeah, I faced Johnson and the nets and I'm a relation of his. He goes, it's probably one for you. Susie's asking for advice on chatting up potentially jaded former grade cricketers. I'm looking you dead in the eye. What is your advice? Because I'm thinking, how do you want to be spoken to as a grade cricketer? If Susie's asking for advice, do you want to be fawned over? Do you want them to just think, oh, grade cricket, it's the level below state. You must be good. You must have played against some good players. You want them to think of you the way all grade cricketers want to be thought of. Semi-professionals, one good score away from state cricket.
Yep.
What's your advice to Susie?
First of all, if you are a woman, even talking to a grade cricketer is a huge deal to that person personally and likely 85% of that club.
The grade cricketer?
Just any grade cricketer, not the grade cricketer. Who's a fictional character. It's a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level. Secondly, I love the idea that he said, I know Mitch Johnson. Do you want to have sex? That's what he's really communicating. Thirdly, there really is no secret to chatting up a cricketer. You'll have to guide them through it, though. You'll have to take the lead because it's likely that this won't have happened to them before, especially if they're with their cricketing friends. They just played a game. They've probably been in the sun all day.
He's got really excited, this guy.
He's got a little bit of sunstroke. Yeah.
A lot of cricketers around him. So he's with his teammates.
Yeah.
She's asked me if he plays great cricket.
Robbo's talking to a woman over there.
Yeah. Well, he's with mates who aren't cricketers, he's the cricketer. Do you play great cricket? And he just goes, that's the Shangri-La of the conversation.
Yes.
Bang, top off.
That's the Shangri-La of the conversation.
We've hit the apex straight away.
Now, but what cricketers will do, though, Pez, as you know, they're likely trying to impress the woman they're trying to court with their athleticism. They want to talk about their achievements. They'll give them some stats. But unlike rugby, AFL, any of the football codes, athletics, swimming, darts, debating, European handball, no one gives a fuck.
Yep.
About anything like that. And cricket's probably the least sexually attractive sport there is.
How would you feel hypothetically, and you may have had this before when you are talking about your stats, as I've heard you do.
Right.
How would you feel if the woman you're speaking to was impressed and was asking more about the stats? You'd be in shock.
I'd treat that with suspicion.
Yeah.
I treat that with
you
suspicion.
Go, this is a stitch up. This is a someone stitched me up here. You go like,
am I being punked?
Ashton. I hit 67 against Wests last year.
Yeah.
And she's like, really? How'd you hit him?
Where was that? Blick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd it blick? How's the deck?
How'd you hit him? How was the deck?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was S. Heal playing that day? Now, yeah, I wrote down that you have to treat them like, you know, an Avatar when Sam Worthington gets on the horse and he has to connect his mane to the, like,
yeah,
vividly. You have to do that. You have to walk them through it. You have to have that connection with them because they won't know what that situation is happening, you know, talking with a woman most of the time. Have you ever seen a cricketer on a team night out pick up?
Well, I have, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Really? I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, the old Tigers are, sorry, I can't do it. You can just see my head ticking over there. I'm going to say that? No. Nah.
Yeah. Pez's mouth went absolutely vertical just then. Complete side mouth. I reckon that's all the time we got for the show, mate.
Getting long.
Thank you, Susie. Good question.
Thank you.
And if you want more of that kind of gear, patreon.com/cricketer for hashtag AskTDC Fridays. They're great fun. Thanks to Marnus.
Yeah.
Bad luck on the weekend. Bad luck. He'll be listening to this as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's hitting those runs in the garage of his.
Feel safe again with Barnes.
See you next week.